Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hell Money Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Rotemore. I'm here with, as usual, your lovely co-host, Aaron, boop, and Raph, boop, and Ordinelli, boop. We're at an undisclosed location somewhere deep in the heart of the Matrix. Welcome to the pod.
We're locked deep in the Matrix somewhere. We're in a pod eating the bugs.
Yeah.
But here we get to be in a beautiful VIP booth at a nightclub while other people do stuff to set up for the night. And we just sit here and podcast because that's what we're good for.
That's what we're good for. Raph, this is your second appearance on the podcast. Is that correct?
True? That is true. Yeah, the first one was in Singapore. But I think this is way cooler. We now have, or you guys now have, a costume budget. So
That's right. Thank you to the Hell Money podcast Patreon members. We could not do this without your kind support. We got a new camera, I think, as of two episodes ago. So video quality should be better.
Yeah, we got a new camera. We got costumes for everyone.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we also got these fancy black mic heads for our SM58 mics.
Should probably not do ASMR live on the pod, but
beautiful.
Yeah, and then we also have Ordinelli on the podcast for the first time.
Mysterious behind the scenes kind of guy.
I'm kind of half doxing.
Honored to be here. Yeah. Kind of half doxing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you sort of half doxed in Amsterdam.
Yes.
On stage where you wore the.
I had my caviar hat, right?
The cocaine and caviar.
Legendary. I forgot that, unfortunately, in the Matrix. But
right.
Now I have my special sunglasses.
The loadout screen.
Yeah. Why are we all here? Why are we all together? Oh, for the event, right? That's being set up. I'm like, literally, how did we end up here?
Oh yeah, the murders.
It's just coincidence.
Well, because that's the thing, is usually, we're all around the world, so we're not physically together. But I guess this group comprises several groups that are varying levels of entangled with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the board of directors for the Open Ordinals Institute.
Yep.
I think legally we shouldn't even be allowed to all be in the same room together.
That's right. Yeah, if we die,
it's like the president and the vice president being on the same plane. Yeah.
The multi-sig holders in one room.
Yeah. People are usually, they're often confused about what is Ordinals? What is the Ordinals protocol? Is there a company? Who's doing what? So we hope today to finally elucidate the mysterious holding structures of the various entities involved with Ordinals, which fortunately is actually very simple. So I guess you just mentioned the Open Ordinals Institute. So that is a nonprofit. The four board members of the nonprofit are the four of us here. It does not do very much. It's not really, it's not involved at all with sort of guiding the protocol or making decisions. It is not a decision-making entity. All it does is that it funds Raph's work on the protocol, not mine. I work for free, and it pays for the servers. And we all sit on the board, and we formed this thing when?
August 2023.
Yeah.
Because I remember Ordinals, Ord Inscribe, was launched on mainnet on an Aquarius new moon. Mm-hmm. And then the OOI was formed on the Aquarius full moon 6 months later in August. Yep. I remember
that. Is that a good omen?
It's just a new moon is a new beginning, right? So that was the new beginning. And then the full moon is a culmination thing. So I think it's that first thing. And then it comes to this is sort of the form that this is going to take.
Mm-hmm.
I think also the founding went hand in hand with my promotion to lead maintainer.
That's right. Yeah.
Made us look more professional to have a lead maintainer.
Yeah, it seems
like we have a team of engineers behind us, you know?
Yeah, everybody's very confused when they find out that it's just me and Raph behind the scenes. It turns out that if you don't do something of an insane Baroque complexity level, you kind of only need a couple dudes grinding in the background or one trans guy.
I think we could, we could be adding one or two additional kind of students or
for sure. Yeah,
right? Yeah, so we'd like to find another engineer or two to work with us.
And we have some contributors that do stuff here and then, and they're good contributors. So we're always happy to look at those PRs and kind of we're very patient, but it's very high standards we have on the code base. There's a lot of testing involved.
Yep.
But we also do the coding streams.
Mm-hmm,
yep. Those are kind of also under the Open Ordinals kind of umbrella. We have a YouTube channel, the Open Ordinals Institute YouTube channel. where we kind of then stream on the Discord.
Yep.
Yeah, wait, okay, actually now getting into the nuances of the Venn diagram, because I'm starting to be like, like, okay, Ordinals Coding Club, which exists on the Ordicord, the Discord.
I think I'm the admin, I'm the owner of
the Ordicord.
Yeah, I feel like the there's kind of like, there's stuff that's actually kind of just yours.
Yeah, a lot
Ordinals.com.
Yeah, so Ordinals.com I bought when I started the, when I sort of came up with the name Ordinals, which was in, I think, like early, mid 2022, I believe. Mm-hmm. I got it. It was not like a new registration. Somebody else had registered it, but they were selling it for the low, low price of, I think, $2,000.
Wow.
Probably the best purchase I ever made.
Wow.
Yeah. Super
really good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then at the same time, I also bought ordinals.net and ordinals.org. And those were both new registrations. So those I paid, you know, the $20 registration fee. Ordinals.org is on loan to the Open Ordinals Institute, where you can go to ordinals.org and you can go to the donation page and you can donate some sats to fund RAF's. Right, we're in New York, so rats work.
Rats are on the mind.
Is that RAF over there?
It is, I think.
Look, there's a rat in the subway tracks dragging its walls through the water. So yeah, there's ordinals.com, ordinals.net, ordinals.org. Those are actually just all owned by me. Ordinals.net on loan, or ordinals.org on loan to the Open Ordinals Institute. Then ordinals.com, that is the domain where we run the main instance of Ord, or not the main instance, but sort of the public facing instance that everybody can use to explore the blockchain. That thing that you are talking to when you go to ordinals.com, that is Ord. That is software that you can run on your computer. If you run that, it will look exactly like ordinals.com. It's all open source.
Do you use ordinals.net?
No, ordinals.net I don't use anything for.
What is like .net canonically used for?
God, I don't remember. So like originally .com was for commercial organizations.
Yeah, because ordinals.com isn't like even quite the right fit for what it's used for.
Honestly,
right?
ordinals.net would make more sense.
Yeah.
Net, I guess. I don't know if it's for general internet things. I don't know what the original idea behind the domain name was. But I just got it to just fill out the portfolio.
I mean, we use ordinals.net for our actual servers. Like, the actual servers are running on these domains.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
true.
And then we have a load balancer in front of ordinals.com that, like, disperses it to three or four servers in the background.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And then, like, what are other things that are, like, owned by me? I guess the GitHub, like the Ordinals GitHub. I think I'm the owner of that. I think Raf has admin access. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he has the power to kick me off of the...
I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but I am an owner of the crate on Rust, on crates.io.
A co-owner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then there's like the GitHub. And the GitHub, yeah, so the GitHub is not really owned by... It's owned by me, I guess, and that's sort of managed by me and Raf. Raf sort of on behalf of the Open Ordinals Institute, or as funded by the Open Ordinals Institute. And then there's the crate, the Ord and Ordinals crate. Ord is the daemon, like the server and wallet and everything. And that is a Rust crate. And so I think me and Raf are co-owners of that. And then there's the Ordinals library crate, which is also me and Raf are co-owners of that. And then there's Inscribing Atlantis.
Well, I was going to say there's
the
Ordicord and the Ordinals Coding Club.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Those
right?
are, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But that's kind of you still, right?
The Ordicord is his, but I think the YouTube channel is more open on his.
I think Charlie created. Did Charlie create the YouTube channel?
Yeah, maybe honestly Charlie might control it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he controls, but I created it, and then I gave him access.
Okay, yeah.
We're getting into all the various entanglements here. But I mean, so there's all these kind of like nebulous parts that are like... I don't know. I mean, benevolent dictator status to like kind of like community funded to whatever, you know, like it's all kind of all over the spectrum. But then how are you involved?
I'm involved in various ways. So
this is going to be a lame ass podcast if you're just cagey the entire time. Various business matters and concerns.
So different ownerships. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, my original kind of involvement was with, contributing a little bit to the open source code base.
Mm-hmm.
this is
like important speed up to the index. Very yeah, that was critical like, speed up to the indexer.
And it's still something I would like to get back into because it's like it's, you know, that's kind of what originally drew me to this work, like mm-hmm. the indexing the Bitcoin blockchain, kind of really kind of looking at transactions with this special lens and trying to make that very efficient. So that's you know, kind of what originally drew me to it. And mm-hmm. then now I'm mainly involved with the Open Ordinals Institute. So I don't know, which role do I have? I'm the treasurer.
Treasurer, yeah.
So maybe we do the role.
You're the adult in the room.
I'm the adult in the room. I'm trying.
He's the president, I'm the secretary, and he's the chairman.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think that's right.
This is news to me. These are just like the legally mandated roles that you like have to have.
Minimum.
Yeah. I think it's because like the three roles, like treasurer, president, secretary, were necessary. And then you have to have someone on the board who's not those three people be the chairman. So then I was like, okay.
Okay, by default.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a natural role.
Yeah.
It fits.
Yeah, I think it's good.
It's ceremonial.
Yeah. And the Open Source Institute really doesn't do much. I mean, we take money and we pay RAF and we pay for the servers too. Yeah. Two of our servers are in Germany.
One in Germany, two in Ukraine.
I think only one in Ukraine.
Maybe only one.
Yeah. I get very nervous about the lump sums of Bitcoin being sent.
Yeah, it looks
Ukraine
pretty sketchy. Like we're just yellowing Bitcoin every month to some like random Ukrainian, you know, service provider. Hostico. We actually like them a lot. Hostico has done a great job of hosting our servers.
I think it's all pretty transparent.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't disagree. Yeah.
Is it transparent? Do we publish our Open Ordinals Institute like financials anywhere?
I mean, you can see the address and all the transactions.
Oh, yeah. True. Yeah.
So we're not.
That's our version of transparency.
It's on a public ledger.
You can see the slush fund moving around the blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like literally, yeah, that was something that I liked about Bitcoin was like that level of transparency that you can have if you want, you know, like the address that we receive donations through is on ordinals.org/donate.
Yep.
And you can see when we pay RAF or when we pay for servers. It's like, I mean, yeah, it's all there.
Yep.
It's actually kind of nice when I was doing accounting. Like I was like, oh, this is...
There's this ledger.
It's crazy we have a ledger of transactions like this. It's verifiable. Love that.
And we have been on a Bitcoin standard for... Yep. I think that's pretty cool, actually. Nice.
Yeah.
Everything gets paid in Bitcoin. We specifically chose Hostico, our Ukrainian hosting provider, because they accept Bitcoin for servers. Hostico should sponsor the pod.
Yeah. Come on, Hostico.
That's a good idea. Yep. Yeah, so I think right now Open Audits Institute doesn't do much yet. I think it's an important role to sponsor the open source development. I think that role can become larger. I think there's more that can be done. But then the other way I'm involved in this Venn diagram is with Raf and Aaron working on Inscribing Atlantis.
Which I am not a part of. I am not part of Inscribing Atlantis. I'm a programmer. I'm not good at business. There was an abortive attempt to start a company at the beginning of this all taking off. It was called Ordinals Corp or Ord Corp for short. It did not go well, unfortunately. Ord Corp did not go well. So it is no more. It has been dissolved, which I think is actually pretty good. Like, I think it's very nice that in reality, like, everything's pretty clean. Like, I just chill. I write code. The servers are paid for. And yeah.
You're an artist. Yeah, I'm an artist. I think, like, you enjoy your creative freedom. You maximize for freedom.
Yeah, I just want to chill and write code. Yeah. And, yeah.
You're also allergic to making money, as many people would be able to plainly see.
Making money requires, you know, making commitments about things you're going to do in the future. It involves a lot of hard, unpleasant work. Like, I just want to flip the bits, you know? I just want to...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why we started Inscribing Atlantis, to also do the hard and unpleasant work of...
Making money.
No. Actually, it's a mission to, you know, further the culture of ordinals.
I think I said it well we did the NFT NYC panel earlier today, and I think I had a pretty good businessy kind of answer. Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I said, well, you know, like, we like to keep the nonprofit simple and, like, you know, we're not trying to overpromise, but, you know, what we'd love to do is bring more artists into ordinals. And so it made sense to have a different, which I think is true.
This was literally the discussion we had in the beginning, right? How can we organize events? How can we bring the community and the people together in a way that doesn't lose us money, right? And it's hard to do in a nonprofit, I think.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's so, I think that's been a big lesson, honestly, of having the nonprofit in the first place is like, okay, obviously it's great to have a nonprofit structure for receiving donations and paying people through donations. Like, that is a no-brainer. But to run everything through a nonprofit is like so annoying. Everything that I've had to do that's not like, I think there were only maybe two or three things that I had to pay for that weren't sort of like specifically like from the two categories of things that we pay, which is RAF and hourly rate and like servers. It just is so much like you have to sign off on everything, like you have to like get the board to approve, and it's just like a nightmare. So I mean, it's a lot easier to have just like the freedom of a like LLC corporation style organization and not like, in my opinion, just like muddy the waters of OOI. Like, I would rather OOI just stay pristine and then we do whatever we want on the other side of things.
Yeah, and it's important for OOI not to go out and be endorsing one thing or another, you know?
And that's what I always tell people too. Like, there's a lot of people I think who, like, part of why I think this conversation is interesting, or maybe people will be interested in it, is because I think there's a lot of confusion about like who is what and what organization does what. I always have to tell people like, OOI doesn't like collaborate with anyone. We don't like sponsor anything. We're not like working with anyone. We'd never endorse anything. Like, that is just literally just the neutral open source protocol. But then Inscribing Atlantis has a lot more freedom to be like, oh, like we like this artist or we like this collection and we want to like, I mean, you know, I think like it takes the technical expertise of like RAF and Ordinally, and it like, like, those are the people that should be helping artists, right? Like, those are the people that you ideally want to help you inscribe. It was so funny. Last night, actually, I was out and so many people were like, oh, like, you work with Ordinally. Like, he helped me from day one to inscribe. And I was like, fucking Ordinally always has his hands in everything.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think I think that's part of how the how the Inscribing Atlantis also came together, right? Like, there was such a demand from when the protocol was launched for people to get help, right? You know, many artists recognized very early the potential, but the technology is, you know, it's like it's easy for us to use, but it's not easy for an artist. You know, today you can drag and drop your JPEG, but like, you know, if you want to do, you know,
cooler features,
things that are a little more interesting,
and not spend a million dollars on fees.
You can, you know, you can do a lot more with some, you know, kind of like, you know, maybe a little bit of kind of custom coding or a little bit of like, you know, like exploiting the whole feature set of what we built with art. So, I think that's having a commercial context for that with Inscribing Atlantis is, I think, like also very beneficial for the open source work, like working with RAF, like, you know, the last few months on, you know, inscribing specific collections and recognizing, oh, this is actually the user experience of what you're doing when you're like, you know, inscribing hundreds of images on special sets, and you know, like all this stuff like benefits the open source protocol as well. I think that's, you know, so it's a virtuous kind of circle of having these two things.
Like the recent improvement to the wallet, where the wallet now talks to the server, which can continuously run in the background and stay up to date. That really happened because RAF was making a lot of inscriptions. It was like, oh my god, this is fucking horrible. This needs to change. And so then he went and changed it, and it's much better. And now everybody benefits from that.
Yeah, it was like kind of the programmer's curse. Like, you always program in this thing, but then you don't actually use it because you spend all your time like programming on it. And then, exactly. The wallet now I've realized if you have a lot of UTXOs and a lot of inscriptions, the wallet is slow again.
Things go bad, yeah.
So I'm fixing that at the moment. Mm-hmm. So like it's learning by doing, basically, because you can test as much as you want, but tests don't really capture the real world use cases. Yeah. Like we have a lot of tests, but like the real world use cases, like you always have to actually like do it.
Yep.
So like, yeah, I've been really glad to like do stuff with Inscribing Atlantis and like practice actually inscribing through that.
Yeah, I think it also was something that wasn't necessary, like until really like the Jubilee, I would say it wasn't really that possible for you to take on much more than just Ord. Like, because Inscribing Atlantis, we did Inscribing Amsterdam in the fall, and that was like an event that wasn't, you know, we did do a collection for that, but that wasn't really like technical like work on either of your parts. It was really just an event, and a collection, and we kind of were just seeing, do we like this? Like, what do we take this
can
from
we
here?
Work together?
I think,
like,
yeah. do I we think like a lot other? Of
we like each other. Yeah, I mean, I think what that collection showed is that also like careful curation is you know is an aspect that is very valuable. So I think that's also something we're bringing together in Inscribing Atlantis, not just the technical side, but also like you know we have an art historian who's helping us with curation and mm-hmm. you know cataloging and you know kind of really bringing out the art in a way that I think really shows off the full potential. So I think you know that's one thing we pioneered with the Amsterdam Blooms.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is like I think that it was only really recently that the protocol was even kind of done in the sense of mm-hmm. having all of the core features that an artist or a creator would be interested in.
Yeah.
And then I think like the transition to then being like, okay, well now the features are done, but I mean, how many people are using parent child, for example, when they inscribe? Not that many. Yep. Compared to how many could be.
Yep.
Even something like that, right? Where it's just, you know, that might not be something that's obvious to someone who's making a collection, or especially if it's a big collection, they don't know how necessarily. And so I feel like there's just features like that where, you know, you have a good idea of how those things work, but you haven't actually practically used them, or at least at that time you hadn't. And now it's like the experience of actually using them and realizing the hurdles, and also just, yeah, I think like the ideal project that we take on with Inscribing Atlantis is, I think, a project that like shows the protocol features. I always like when it applies to the digital megalith narrative of like, you know, something that's cataloging either an important part of culture or history or this moment in time or something, because I like the archaeological idea of Bitcoin as being this like primary source document of our mm-hmm. digital era. So anything that's like that, I like, I feel like that fits as well. And then, yeah, artistically interesting, artistically kind of pushing things forward. I would say those are kind of like the three things that we look for. But that's, you know, I think a lot of that is in the ethos of the core protocol. It just doesn't make sense to do that under a nonprofit, mm-hmm. you know, like it just, it's like, yeah, just having to work with the government is awful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Many such cases.
Many such cases. And then other entities, I guess the Helmany pod,
right,
the podcast.
The podcast, what's the word I'm looking for? Like
multimedia empire.
Multimedia empire, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That and is that's the Helmany podcast.
That's me and Aaron. That's our thing. We mm-hmm. started it like almost 2 years ago at this point, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, almost 2 years ago.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Was I on the whole ordinals thing when we met?
Yes.
When we met, like
you just
before,
started.
When we first met at like Bay Area Bitcoin mm-hmm. meetup, I had already started ordinals.
Yeah, but I don't know that you were calling them ordinal. I remember, because didn't Mark Goodwin kind of come up with the ordinal theory?
He came up with the term ordinal theory.
Ordinal theory,
not,
yeah.
Not ordinals.
Yeah, yeah, so I think you were working on ordinals when I met you in January 2022 mm-hmm. or had just started.
Yeah.
But then I think like it was kind of the like May through August period that you were like really, that was all you talked about.
Yeah.
And then we recorded the Ordinal Theory Helmany podcast episode August 2022.
Yep.
And that was when I feel like the ordinal theory aspect was fully fleshed out enough for you to actually present about it in a quite deranged way.
Yeah.
I think that was the episode I saw, and then I decided I wanted to help Casey out.
Nice.
Yeah, because like, then you started working for Casey in
September,
right? Yeah,
you built this very nice, I don't know, sales funnel, you know? I mean, your video had like, I don't know, maybe 10 views on YouTube.
Oh my God, it gets lower every time you say that. It used to be 100, then it was 50, now it's 10.
I was like, damn, these people are dropping so much alpha, I have to work with them.
I mean, it's true. We were recording the Helmany podcast much more consistently than we record now. We were recording
once
episode
a week
for probably 6 to 8 months straight.
Yep.
And it would get 100 to 200 views.
Yep.
Like I think the Ordinal Theory episode got like 300 views.
Yeah. Go back and give our earlier videos some views, some
they're
likes.
Good.
They're good. They're really good.
Yeah, like in particular, the craft store Bitcoin episodes are probably my nostalgic favorite, which is like a very simple step-by-step walkthrough of how Bitcoin works with visual aids from Michael's craft store.
Like Cat Bro owns this.
Anarcho
Cat Bro owns this, but you don't know which, you don't know who is Anarcho Cat Bro.
Yeah. Yeah, no, those were my episodes I was most skeptical about filming. I was like, these are going to be awful. I don't want to do this at all. And then they turned out great.
Yeah.
Isn't there also some unreleased episodes?
Yeah, there are.
We won't get into the unreleased episodes.
They're too spicy for you know, yeah.
If you can believe it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, okay, wait. So does that encompass all of the various entities
I think
and
so.
Things?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so there's OOI. Yep. There's kind of just like nebulous ordinals things that either you own or you kind of control, but mm-hmm. hopefully you don't go like haywire and, yep. you know, betray yep. ordinals or yep. something.
You go to ordinals.com and it just redirects to the Cardano website or something.
Ordinals, long term plan, right?
Ordinals is now Cardano. Yeah, and I'm like going away with my suitcases of money to my private island.
Oh, runes though.
Oh yeah,
right?
Runes.
That's, I feel like, another Venn diagram where it's like, how does runes fit into all of this or not, you know?
Yeah, so runes is, you know, it's part of Ord. It's part of the main, the implementation of runes is in the same code base as the implementation of ordinals and inscriptions. Raph works on that code base and he does help with runes quite a bit. But we decided that it would not be appropriate to take funds that had been given to the Open Ordinals Institute and use that to fund anything.
Shitcoining.
Yeah. Because, okay, like, you like inscriptions. Does that mean that you automatically like runes just because the same people are doing it? Like, no, they're very different. So, Raph, we just begged the degens for some money on Twitter. We posted a Bitcoin address and saying, like, hey, Raph, I need help on runes. Send Bitcoin to this address, it will go directly to Raph to work on runes. The degens were very
there was overwhelming support. Like, it was crazy how much the people sent. Yep. So yeah, thank you, like, very much for that.
Half a Bitcoin, like, at this point,
I think, something around that. Yeah,
yeah.
But more than half a Bitcoin. Yep. Yeah,
so that's been enough to fund Raph's work on runes up until now, up through launch. And then I have a very talented, smart friend of mine who we paid to help us out with sort of like a review kind of audit kind of thing.
That was probably the best money I spent so far.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And like, I mean, the couple of thousand that I spent on, like, for his review, it was incredible. Like, he's so smart. He like instantly got all the intricacies and all the edge cases of the protocol.
Yep, yep.
Showed us like crazy stuff that we were doing wrong or that mm-hmm. would like lead to like subtle errors in the long term.
Yep.
It was amazing to like watch.
Yeah,
work.
He's the one who's really responsible for. We already had cenotaphs, but there are many more cases that now become cenotaphs.
Can you explain what a cenotaph is?
Absolutely, Aaron. I'm so glad you asked. A cenotaph is a memorial monument or like grave for somebody whose remains are not there. So if somebody who was lost at sea or who died abroad or something like that, it's an empty tomb. Okay, what is the whole idea behind runes and cenotaphs? The idea is that we want to be able to upgrade the runes protocol in the future with new features. And in reality, there are actually very few features that we're thinking about adding. The protocol is fungible tokens are simple. If you don't do crazy things that don't work, they don't need a whole lot of functionality. But we do want to add these things in the future. But we want to avoid the case where a old unupgraded client, like a runes v1 client, can't be tricked into thinking that it has runes that it does not, right? Like, maybe there would be a new feature that could change the way that runes transferred in a transaction, and a new client, a v2 client, would see the v2 client owner as owning the runes, and the v1 client would see the same runes as belonging to the v1 owner. And so we don't want that to happen. So the way that upgrades are handled is that a malformed runestone, which includes runestones that use, you know, new features, V2, V3, V4, V5 features, the effect of those runestones, according to the old unupgraded clients, appear as cenotaphs. When a transaction appears with a cenotaph, all runes that are input to that transaction are burned. And so this prevents tricking old clients about the location of these runes, because according to the old client, those runes appear as being burned.
And sounds scary, Casey.
Does sound scary. Wait, and so the idea behind the word cenotaph is that they're sort of like a tombstone or a marker, but the bodies, i.e. the actual runes, are in an unknown location. So that's why they're called the cenotaph. What were you going to say, Aaron?
Sounds scary, Casey.
It does
I'm
sound...
worried about burning all my runes.
It does sound scary, but you shouldn't worry about it at all. So you can, it's very easy to determine whether or not a runestone, i.e. a rune protocol message in a Bitcoin transaction, is a cenotaph. You don't need to run an index to know whether a transaction is a cenotaph or not. It is completely knowable without looking at the chain state. And it's honestly, it's very simple. Like, just don't misencode your runestone. Like it's idiots. This is easy. Yeah. And like when people are like, oh, this is so scary, like what, why would you do this? It's like, well, what should the runes index do when it hits a malformed protocol message?
Cursed runes.
Yeah, dude, don't listen. Negative names.
That was the most stressful time of my life.
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah. But so like the protocol is very, very simple. It is not hard to create a well-formed runestone. You can use the library, the ordinals library crate, to encode runestones or to just use it as a sanity check. So you produce your own runestones, you run it through this protocol and you find out, okay, does it, you know, was it correctly encoded? Yeah, so it's not hard. And like, but honestly, I mean, like the infrastructure providers out there are terrible. They test and prod. They don't test at all. We ask them things like, oh, hey, you know, are you, you know, running your code on like regtest or something? They're like, no, we're testing it on mainnet. Like that's how we do it, which is mind-bogglingly stupid to me. So yeah, but it's in reality, it's not hard to avoid. A cenotaph doesn't happen by accident is what I'm saying.
So what do we provide to help people avoid it?
I mean, we provide a library, the ordinals library, the crate. So you can, that contains decoding runestones from transactions or encoding runestones into a transaction. So yeah, it is not, it's not hard to do. Nice. Yep.
Why did we get on this tangent? Oh, because you got the code review. So what was the code review?
We're talking about runes.
Yeah.
I know, but the code review of runes, then you brought up this.
Oh yeah, right. So this, this friend of mine, he, sort of convinced us to tighten up a lot more edge cases now that are sort of nonsensical things that you can do with runestones are now cenotaphs. The other reason that we have cenotaphs is because a protocol like runes, there is really no chain consensus, right? Like, you know, anybody can publish a runestone to the blockchain. And so it's definitely a challenge to keep indexers in sync. So cenotaphs provide a stiff penalty for diverging from the spec. And so it's our hope that this will mean that people will be very careful about their runestone encoders and decoders. They will not litter the blockchain with a bunch of weird invalid transactions. And if they start making bad transactions, they will notice very quickly because they'll see the runes as being burned. They won't have some bizarre encoding that they use that happens to work, that that does what they want. They'll see, okay, we're producing cenotaphs, we need to fix this. So it's also in the hopes to kind of guide everybody towards non-weird runestones and all agreeing on the same state.
But something, maybe technical question, so something that is not a cenotaph now, or that is a cenotaph now, might become recognized in a future version, right?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
So what happens if something is on the blockchain now that is now recognized as a cenotaph, and then at some point in the future, as a future protocol becomes recognized?
Yeah, I mean, this is possible. That's, yeah, it would just have new semantics, and everything the things that cannot change are which runes were etched. Mm-hmm. And whether or not a rune was minted in a mm-hmm. transaction. So even in cenotaphs, if a cenotaph contains a mint, that mint happens, but those minted runes are burned. Yep. Yeah. And if a rune is etched in a cenotaph, the rune still exists. Nobody else can etch the same name, but the supply is set to zero and it is unmintable.
So the total supply of runes is just strictly increasing with newer versions.
Yeah. Only go up. I mean, hopefully we don't have a bunch of cenotaphs that suddenly pop, you know, billions of weird runes, weird burned runes into existence. But yeah, hypothetically speaking, up only.
Yeah, up only inflationary market. So why is runestone, right? That's like the runestone is like the implementation.
No, a runestone is a runes protocol message.
Okay.
Which is you have a transaction, you have runes going to the inputs. You want to specify how runes are going to the output, as well as whether you're minting a rune and whether you're creating a new rune. And so a runestone is a rune protocol message that encodes all of that in mm-hmm. a Bitcoin op return.
And then runes is like ord.
Runes is the protocol. Runes is like ordinals.
So runes is like ord.
Or runes is like, no. I mean, runes are like inscriptions, right? There are different protocols that are on top of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And they're both in ord, which is the reference implementation.
So why is runes in ord?
Mostly because it was easiest that way. It would have just been a massive pain in my ass to create like a whole new binary and a whole new website.
There's a lot of boilerplate code, like talking to Bitcoin Core, getting blocks. We have like a lot of optimized things for fetching blocks.
No.
It's just a lot of work.
Also, I think what the degens want is a sort of seamless, interoperable sandbox to plan. They want different things to do on Bitcoin, and they don't want to have them all be different programs and different protocols and different universes, right? They don't want that fragmentation. So I think it's much better if runes and inscriptions are sort of maintained together and in the same software, and then they can interoperate in certain ways. Like, for example, when you create a rune, you can also create an inscription, which becomes the sort of logo for the rune. And we can add in the future recursive endpoints so that inscriptions can access the rune balance of an address or of, you know, the same output that the inscription is on to do, you know, one thing or another.
Yeah, I guess.
Raph was very nervous about the entangling of runes.
I mean, also, from a technical perspective, like a lot of the code is just the same, right? Yeah. You need to index the blockchain. Otherwise, mm-hmm. It's hard.
Yep.
Maybe the R in ORD stands for runes.
That's right.
Ordinals and runes demon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, damn, that's good.
There you go.
I think we'll probably make it possible to only index runes.
Yeah,
at some point.
Does that not work? Like,
we have a flag like no index inscriptions, but it doesn't work.
What happens when you don't index inscriptions?
It just doesn't fetch the transactions and just doesn't really work.
Really?
Like it gets like an error. It's
right,
like,
because
it's total bullshit. Like,
because there's no, it doesn't fetch the transactions.
It doesn't populate our our three level cache to fetch. So yeah, that's broken.
No. I think it's that the blocks are empty, because when you do before the first inscription height. You don't fetch any.
We've never used that flag, so we don't know.
We should just remove it
and then have like only index runes, and then the indexing is pretty quick. Like indexing runes is like just looks at op returns.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll add.
It doesn't
that
do any
release,
of this
hopefully.
Like the SAT.
So you don't, if you don't care about inscriptions, you don't have to use it.
Yeah.
But this is where I think it gets into the nuances of the Venn diagram intersections, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like you control the GitHub, and so you can just put runes in there.
That's right, yeah.
And we're
that's
like, right. Well, we're not paying for it out of OOI, but that's the best we
I
can
didn't
do.
Want OOI to pay for it,
no,
to be
you
clear.
Didn't, you didn't. But
yeah.
But we made that distinction.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's possible that at some point in the future, I don't know, I mean, like, would we ever want to fund runes using OOI money? I don't think there's this like really a pressing need for that. We could eventually make like a separate donation address for people just funding runes development.
I think the important thing is that we're clear with the mandate, right? So if we like extend the scope of OOI to include runes, then that would be fine. But I think the point so far was like we have collected donations for building inscriptions and ORD, so we didn't want to use that money for something else. Mm. I think that you know that's kind of the transparency I want to see in that. So
yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. But then I feel like on a personal level, it's more like, okay, if I look at ordinals, it's like I can pretty much vouch for and stand behind everything that's been an outcome of ordinals and inscriptions. I mean, not literally every inscription or everything that anyone's done with ordinals, but in terms of the way that it affects Bitcoin and how it plays out, I feel pretty comfortable with it and I like it and I think it's good for Bitcoin. I feel like runes is this like weird question mark where I'm like, this might be a demon. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about it? Because I feel like before ordinals took off, you had a very specific idea of game theoried out everything, basically. Yeah. Not to say things happened that
I predicted it all.
You kind of, to be honest, like you did honestly predict. Yeah, like most things. I mean, obviously there's ways people have used it, like BRC20, for
BRC20.
Example, that you
the big,
could, that
the
you
big
predict.
One that I didn't predict was mempool sniping of PSBT atomic swaps. That's a really interesting one that's pretty big that I didn't predict at all.
Yeah, and BRC20.
And BRC20, yeah.
But so I mean, there's stuff that you didn't predict, but generally speaking, in terms of like, okay, the fee market is going to do this and like, you know, I don't know. There was a lot that I think played out pretty much exactly as you thought it would. I don't think you have that same scheme for runes. Like, do you? You know?
I mean, as far as what happens with the fee market, I mean, like, I think fees go up, right? But that's also pretty easy to predict because we've seen exactly the same thing with BRC20. So it's, you know, clear that we'll have sort of a repeat of that. As far as the ultimate success of failure or runes of runes, I really don't know.
Not even success and failure, but more like kind of...
Oh, no, but I mean like, you know, how it's adopted, what kind of runes people make, what kind of runes are popular, what the distribution is between different runes, like how much market share they take. I have no idea.
Yeah. So yeah. I feel less like... Like, I feel like ordinals, I'm like, yeah, you know, we should really build out the tools to make that happen. With runes, I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, you're an artist.
I have to unleash my demons. Yeah.
It's like, there's you have no choice in the matter. Like, this is who you are.
I think runes could really be a flop. Like, could completely just be a flop. I think that inscriptions are really kind of a slam dunk, right? Like, NFTs, you want NFTs on the most permanent, highest status chain, right? And having this simplicity to inscriptions in terms of they're all the same and all the art, all the content is on chain, I think that makes a lot of sense. With tokens, I think that people are much, much more mercenary. Like, for example, take stablecoins. The chain doing the highest stablecoin volume is Tron. Tether on Tron is the king of stablecoins. And so I think that means that it indicates that people don't have a strong preference there for, the chain being high quality, the chain being secure, the chain being decentralized. And then features wise, realistically, I think runes, you know, has about the same features as BRC20. It has longer ticker names, which I actually think is really nice. It's much more expressive, but it has BRC20's open mint mechanic. It's not that different from other token protocols. It doesn't have this very distinguishing advantage, like all content being on chain.
I think that's true in the sense that like, it's kind of intuitive why, as you said, you would want inscriptions over NFTs.
Yeah.
What is the reason to want runes over like a Solana meme coin?
Right. Does anybody talk about like the longevity of their Solana meme coin? Does anybody care that Dog with Hat like outlives them? Right. Like, it's I think that's a much weaker value proposition for
it's very ephemeral.
Yeah, very ephemeral. You want to pump your bags, you want to get out.
You want to go in and out quickly. Yeah. You want like a lot of liquidity and
in and out quickly, a lot of liquidity. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, like you like to, I imagine that like these tokens are much more likely to eventually sort of die completely, like individual tokens that just nobody cares about, you know?
Yeah.
Like weird tokens from the 2017 ICO bubble. Like, are those around, you know? Because there is no, with NFTs, there is a lot of premium on older collections. Mm-hmm. Older collections are inherently valued as being more scarce. They're sort of these old artifacts. With tokens, I don't think that's the case. Nobody is going to like Potcoin and being like, oh, look, Potcoin was a 2014 ICO altcoin. Like, this is a grail. You have to own Potcoin. Nobody says that. Nobody's ever said that before this moment. No, yeah, Dogecoin is like maybe the one sort of example, but like the past is a graveyard. But I would say
Dogecoin had a revival because I think meme coins are the meta.
Yeah, meme coins
are
the meta.
You know what I mean? Like Dogecoin was kind of the original meme coin.
Yeah.
And I think like Dog with Hat is just like a new version of Doge. It's the Doge meme coin. You know?
I have things to say to the degens about rune names.
Oh, no.
Okay?
They better be fucking good.
Yeah. What I've seen before of the DGen's runes names have not been good. Okay. I have not seen a single decent idea for a rune name. I'm not even joking. Not one. Literally not one.
But the real alpha is if you have a good name, why would you put it anywhere?
This is kind of true, but I see a lot of terrible ideas, right? So
it's like the mid curve. You know what I mean? Like
it's like the dark forest. You don't want to reveal yourself.
The high curve people, they are keeping it secret. The low curve people are illiterate and they can't use Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would believe
they
that.
They can't think 13 characters or longer.
I would believe that if I had seen some names that people were talking about on Twitter that were good. Right. You would suspect that like, okay, people are sharing some ideas for names, right? They clearly don't care about sharing them or not.
For example, like Runestone, like Leonidas's project, like that's going to have a name, but they're not saying it, right? They just stole the name from your thing, to be honest.
I think Leonidas asked me like, oh, hey, do you think this would be confusing? And I was like, I'm a dev, not a cop, you know?
Maybe
I should have said no. It's
I'm
too
just
confusing.
Saying what he's calling it now is not going to be the name because it's not 13 characters or longer, right? So, and he's not going to say what he wants it to be because he wants to get it.
True, yeah.
So I think like it's just really there's lots of people that I think want to do things, but they don't want to give it away.
I have no confidence that the things that people are keeping secret are any better than the things that they are suggesting on Twitter. So I just want...
that could be totally true.
I just want to... passionate plea to people, please think of good names. Don't think of cringe bullshit. Okay. Don't do like rune something. Like think of like a new idea. Okay. I posted a list on Twitter of like just random things that I thought up over the top of my head that I think are just,
and none of them are cringe at all.
None of them are cringe at all. No. The best one is the piss fetishist doubloons.
People love that.
The PFD. Yeah. So just think of something creative. Think of something funny. Pick a good emoji. Like pick a good emoji for the currency symbol. You can use spacers in your names, which are bullets, which don't contribute to like
the uniqueness of the name. You can also just use periods. It's just...
Oh, yeah. In the UI, you can use periods, but everything displays as bullet spacers. So yeah, just like guys, like try a little bit harder.
This is all
he
cares about.
I just want the aesthetics to be decent, you know?
Yeah. Have you thought more about whether or not you're going to hard code the first 10? I feel like you change your mind every 5 minutes.
I do. I go back and forth about it. And a big part of the desire to hard code more than one is because the DGens seem to be so bad at coming up with names. Like if I don't, like runes 1 through 9 are just going to be so stupid. Like just so stupid.
I don't know. I've tried to think through like the having block of it all and then just like...
The having block of it all?
Yeah. Like just, you know...
Is that an idiom that I'm not aware of?
I'm trying to think through the blank of it all.
Uh-huh.
Like that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Just, I'm trying to think through the having block of it all.
Uh-huh.
In the sense that like there's the epic stat.
Mm-hmm.
There's the first runes.
Yep.
Like if you are a mining pool who gets that block, what do you do? Like, I feel like they're not thinking of good rune names.
I doubt it.
But are they thinking of runes at all?
Or
are they just gonna let whatever the highest fee is go through? Or do they have like some bribe deal with someone?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I really, but this is where I'm saying like, I feel like with ordinals and inscriptions, like, okay, the epic stat. Okay, like maybe people will want to reorg to get the epic stat, but that's pretty straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. And I can pretty much stand by that. I'm like, okay, maybe there's like a reorg for like a block or two, like mm-hmm. big whoop, whatever, fees are high. Okay. I feel like with runes, that's where I start to get like, oh geez, what the fuck are they going to get into to get those names, you know?
I actually think there's not going to be any hijinks. People have talked a lot about reorgs and stuff on the halving. My personal prediction is no reorgs. I just don't think that anybody's really motivated enough. I think that the technical complexity is high. If you look at the game theory, you're actually better off like trying to bribe people to accept your blocks if you mine them than you are trying to reorg their blocks. And I don't think we've ever seen a actual attempt at a reorg ever. And there are incentives for reorgs, right? The natural incentive for a reorg, aside from runes, is to just try to double spend somebody, to try to send somebody a payment, get them to accept it, and then double spend that payment by reorging out that block that you sent them the payment into.
Sure.
So every time you're making $1 million payment, if you can find somebody who will accept it on one confirmation, that is an incentive to reorg the chain. And I believe we've never seen, not once, a actual attempt at reorging the chain.
But if there's like one block that's all of a sudden 10 times the value of all preceding and all blocks after that,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that like incentivize?
But
it's this gold nugget. You can get that gold nugget.
But a large transaction has sort of the same effect. If you can,
but everyone is getting the trend. Like it's like. It's not just one person saying, hey, we're going to do this and like we're going to reorg here so that this does this. It's every single person can see the gold nugget and wants the gold nugget,
but
which is different, right?
Not necessarily, because my point is that, okay, Bitcoin's been going for 10 years. Over the course of those, you know, 10 plus years, geez, I guess like 15, 14, 15 years?
15, yeah.
15 years at this point. There have been many, 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 many high value transactions. All the time. And those transactions, the value of those transactions dwarfs the size of the fees that those blocks were mined in, right? And so if somebody making one of those transactions could get somebody to accept payment for it with a low number of confirmations, that would be a very, very high incentive to reorg the chain. And yeah, it is true, this is a more visible opportunity to do so.
Yeah, that's more what I mean.
But there have been a lot of implied background opportunities to do this, incentives to do this, and we still haven't seen it. So it seems unlikely to me that this one seems top of everybody's mind because it's much, much more salient. It's much more visible. But the invisible incentives to do so have existed forever.
Fair. Should we bet on it?
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet you 0.01 Bitcoin that there won't be any. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This is where I just think I'm like, I really don't know. I really.
I'll take the bet.
Yeah.
You're gonna bet?
0.01 Bitcoin.
0.01.
All right, let's do it. No reorgs. There we go.
Damn.
Yep.
We're just gonna fleece him dry. Okay, I mean, runes talk. Everything derails into runes talk these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think about runes?
I think it's a little bit like what you said, like with inscriptions. I really see the use case, right? Mm-hmm. It's a use case that resonates with me of having, you know, like a storage medium, a canvas that is really long lasting. And, mm-hmm. And so on. With runes, like I was really, really, really displeased when BSC20s took over inscriptions.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's just from a purely technical perspective, it's like a very kind of wasteful and inefficient protocol. So as an engineer, you look at that and think, well, that could, you know, you could do it a lot better and a lot more efficiently and in a lot more kind of Bitcoin native way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and that's what I like about runes, is that it, you know, runes achieves that, right? It's like, it's a very simple, elegant protocol that kind of takes the essence of what's in, you know, something like BSC20 and does it, you know, I think in a very elegant way. So from a technical perspective, I'm really like, you know, I really like it. From a use case perspective, I'm kind of, you know, I think describing it as a casino, I think is fair. I think that's, you know, that's good. I think there will be a lot of stuff going on there that is probably going to be a little sketchy.
Unsavory,
let's say.
Some could say.
So that's, you know, that's kind of what makes me a little skeptical. But if I just look at it from a technical perspective, and I'm really curious about it as an experiment, right? Mm. This, in terms of launching this is so different from Ordinals, right? Mm. Where no one was expecting that to be like, you know, like a breakout success.
Yeah.
With runes, like, you know, everybody's expecting that to be like a multi-billion dollar kind of overnight success that everybody is now preparing for. And you know, kind of the history of technology shows that that's not necessarily the best condition for success. Yeah. So it's going to be a very interesting experiment in terms of adoption and you know, how will it actually be... you know, how will that actually play out? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, I like the protocol. It's elegant and you know, very efficient and very Bitcoin-y. So
I think a couple of weeks out, I'll just start FUDding. Be like, who are these fucking devs that wrote this? Like, look at these bugs over here. Like, it's total shit.
It's probably the best recipe for success.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to make a FUD thread.
Yeah. I think probably, like, aside from all the casino stuff, maybe if it's good if Bitcoin just has a fungible token protocol kind of in the back pocket that, okay, if, you know, if some way of doing stable coins that's really good on Bitcoin, some interesting use case happens, there is the tokens that you can take advantage of it. But agreed. And it could be a massive flop.
Agreed. I mean, I think, you know, that's also what I'm thinking. I think it's better to have it on Bitcoin in a way that is like a technically solid implementation than not having it or just having it on Tron or Solana.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. And I think, you know, kind of I'm also thinking maybe there is some interesting use cases that you could explore, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like if people want to like tokenize expensive inscriptions, maybe that's a, you know, maybe that's a use case that's that's interesting or whatever. But I think like you said, it's not like the, you know, it's not like something where I think, yeah, this is like a really clear, really kind of like long lasting use case for something, but it's more like, yeah, this is a good implementation if you think that you need a solution for this problem. And that's kind of more you know, okay, yeah, if you want to build a casino, but then you need to build the casino on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, it's maybe, like you said, right? No one is going to care for the long-lasting aspects of your rune that you want to speculate on for a few months, right? It's, so, you know, that's kind of where I have my question marks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Casey is possessed by some sort of spirit in the other world and he needs to make manifest these things. So none of us can pretend to understand the will of these things that exist beyond our realm.
Very well said.
Yeah, so, you know, you just go with it.
It's got a vibe.
You just got to give him the freedom to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Don't make him need to make money or, you know, run a business or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just let him make runes.
Yeah, and at this point, I'm totally mentally checked out from runes already.
Yeah, he's already on his next bullshit.
The protocol is finished. It's all good. We launched it in a word. It's going to do its thing. I don't think we really have any features that we want to add.
Not before launch.
Not
after
before
launch,
launch.
We have some things planned.
The only thing that we have an idea for is gambling, where you can just straight up gamble your runes on the blockchain.
But not for V1.
Just fucking roll the dice.
It's the, like, it's the best casino. There's no house edge. It's only transaction fees. Transaction fees are not relative. They're absolute to the amount you bet.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good casino.
It's a great casino.
Like, you can't get it any better anywhere else.
Yep. Yeah, so now I'm working on a peer-to-peer, very early stages, working on a peer-to-peer file sharing network, which is no blockchain, no crypto, no token whatsoever. It's basically like BitTorrent, but with a like a user interface that makes it very easy to use. But still, fundamentally, the technology is exactly the same as BitTorrent underneath.
He just wants to go to prison for the rest of his life, and he's just continuing down the list of projects until finally one gets him there.
Well, you know, this one, I'm much, much more worried about legal problems than I am with ordinals and inscriptions, because, you know, copyright holders are absolutely vicious. They love to prosecute everybody. And as far as I know, what I'm going to be doing is going to be totally legal. You know, I'm writing software. As far as I know, the developer of a BitTorrent client has never gone to jail. And as long as the model of the software is the same as BitTorrent, I probably won't go to jail. But it really, you know, makes you think that, like, you should really be much more afraid of Disney than you should be afraid of the U.S. government.
100%.
Yeah, because the U.S. government...
That's the capitalist dream, no?
Getting put in the getting put in the Disney gulag.
As long as it's privately owned.
As long as it's privately owned.
The capitalists love it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Should we end it there? Is there anything else we should talk about? I don't know how long we've been going, actually.
You've been going for... 58 minutes.
Oh, okay, great. Yep. What else should we say? I mean, we've got an event tonight. We will be dressed in these outfits for that event.
So I will not be dressed in these outfits. I'm going home. I'm changing.
This is how you're going to break the news to me here on the Whole Money Podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Bro,
sorry.
Fuck my life.
You look really good in the suit.
Yeah, you look terrible. Good. What are you talking about?
I look like a retard.
He wants to wear...
He looks like George Clooney.
Yeah, he wants to wear the same gray hoodie that he's worn for the last 5 days straight.
Exactly. That's when I feel comfortable in.
But yeah, we have an event tonight. I don't know. We've got events all year. I mean, that's part of what we're doing, bringing the culture to Bitcoin. I mean, it's been so fun to see, I mean, not just our events, but so many other people are doing events, and there's such a different culture than Bitcoin events before ordinals. It's insane.
Yep. Yeah.
It's, yeah, there's girls around.
There's girls.
Like that,
we got
you know?
Hers.
It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, you know, runes launch. We'll see how it fucking goes. I stand by nothing. Yeah, anything else?
I think we're good.
All right.
Okay. Love you guys.
See you guys.
See you guys.
Enjoy the having.
Bye.